Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Grantaraj, Shrimad Bhagavatam ki, Jaini Saiko Premanandi. So what did we discuss last night in our Bhakti Vedanta course?
Father came to the ashram, and when he saw the young man, handsome young man with his daughter, he got very angry, and he thought she is not just, she was quite peaceful. She was agitated because he knew she had done the right thing. So if you do the right thing,
you should not be scared. That's good. Any other points? From last night.
And you said the wife should be chaste and should be a good cook.
Yeah.
So yeah. Of course.
Anything else?
Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya was discussed. Wasn't Bhagavat as well as the book of Bhagavat. So Krishna is telling the name, Krishna is assessing the Bhagavat. So we have to serve Bhagavat by reading, associating with it.
Good. Any other points? From last night? Okay. So we're hearing our last night about many of the subject matters relating to grihastha life, how the wife has to be qualified, how the husband has to be qualified. Tonight we'll go into the fourth chapter and we'll discuss verses 1 to 12. And we'll hear about qualifications of brahmacharya and the importance of the brahmacharya ashram. So we're hearing discussion about ashram, the importance of ashram, the Varna ashram dharma situation. Because the Vedic culture is based upon Varna ashram dharma, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is presenting Varna ashram dharma, or the ideal Vedic society. So we're hearing about the different qualities which are mentioned there. So tonight we'll go from verses 1 to 12, chapter 4. Sukadeva Goswami said, "The son of Nabhaga named Nabhaga lived for a long time at the place of his spiritual master. Therefore his brothers thought that he was not going to become a grihastha and would not return. Consequently, without providing a share for him, they divided the property of their father among themselves. When Nabhaga returned from the place of his spiritual master, they gave him their father as his share."
There are two kinds of brahmacharis. One may return home, marry, and become a householder. Whereas the other, known as Brihat Vrata, takes a vow to remain a brahmachari perpetually. The Brihat Vrata brahmachari does not return from the place of the spiritual master. He stays there and later he directly takes sannyas. Because Nabhaga did not return from the place of his spiritual master, his brothers thought that he had taken Brihaspata Brahmachari. Therefore, they did not preserve his soul. And when he returned, they gave him their father as his soul.
So what are the points here?
The cheating was going on even at that time.
Yeah, cheating has been there since the beginning of the universe, the beginning of time. It wasn't that in the past everything was perfect, because these are higher planets, higher living entities, but still there were so many problems, cheating and so many difficulties which were there. So. The material world is never perfect. That's the point. Any other points?
This one facilitates both kinds of brahmacharya.
Which means
if someone wants to take the Brihaspata vow,
But if you come, you have to come on time. Don't come like this. I saw you just sitting out there talking. It's not like you're doing something. If you come on time, come like 15 minutes earlier than this. Come on, manager, come on this way. You too, little mate. What is that?
So if someone takes a brahmachari ashram and then later he decides to get married, then he's contemplated that as well. But at the same time, there are the opportunity for someone to do, remain brahmachari for perpetually as well.
Any other points?
Who was the Navabhadra?
Who?
Whose son was he?
His father's Navaga, it says there.
Who was the father of Navaga?
It's written a couple of, it's written in the last chapter. If you just read back through, you'll find out who was it. Anything else?
Oh, the other thing is, what Naistika Brahmacharya. So it's the one that was taken. There are some ISKCON swamis also who have been domestic brahmacharis.
Yeah, just different terms for the same thing. Anything else?
The practice of spiritual life brahmacharya is very important. So
that's why even the king's son was going to practice in the Vajra. Any other points? So there are different types of brahmacharis. One is called upagravana. Upagravana brahmachari means that you go into the ashram of the guru, you practice brahmacharya, you get trained, you know that you will get married. So in other words, brahmacharya is training. Either way, whether you stay brahmachari or whether you get married, or you stay renounced or you go into household of life, brahmacharya is training, ashram. I was saying to the devotees this morning in the class that I was brahmachari for 8 years here in the ashram in Melbourne, most of the time. And still, because of those 8 years of training, I'm still being carried in my devotional life by those initial years. So it is important that devotees get trained as brahmacharis. Now, most devotees in this room were not brahmacharis or brahmacharinis. They didn't have that opportunity. So you have to make up for lost time. You have to get that training in your ashram, which in one sense is more challenging, more difficult. You have to get the training. In other words, ISKCON is meant for training and education. That's what Prabhupada has pointed out. The benefit of brahmachari or brahmacharini ashram isn't that You can just concentrate on education and training without distraction. When you join ISKCON, you're already married. Then you enter into a situation where it is more difficult to get the training and the education because you have so many other responsibilities simultaneously. But every devotee needs training and education. So the point of this course and courses like it are to train and educate the devotees properly so they can understand what is the goal of life. So that is what brahmacharya is for. Because we understand, Prabhupada explains, each ashram has a word associated with it, a Sanskrit word associated with it. So what is the word that Prabhupada associates with brahmacharya? What is the main point of brahmacharya? No, that's later on.
Study.
Vidya. Vidya means cultivation of knowledge. That is the point of being a brahmachari. Why are we brahmacharis? To cultivate knowledge. So that we can understand the goal of life. You're young, your brain is fertile, you should study. People's brains are very strong when they're young. I know my brain now, because I'm older, it doesn't have the same retention capacity as I did 20 years ago, for example. When I was young, you just remember shlokas, you can study so many things. But these days it's harder for things to retain as the brain slows down, stops working. Even one first devotee I ever met, actually, he lives in New Zealand now. His name is Jai Tirtha Charan Prabhu. He's a Brahmana. And he He wrote recently, I saw him write something, and he said that these days, he must be like around about 60 years old now. So he said, these days, if I can walk into a room and remember why I walked into that room, I'm doing well. That's what happens when you get older. You walk into a room, and you kind of, I'm only 45 and it happens to me. Does anyone know what I'm talking about here tonight?
Yes.
Happened to you?
Yes.
Yeah. I walk into the room and I think, I'm there for about 3 seconds. I think, what did I come in here for? Happens to me, like every day practically. I walk in and I'm like, right, and then you have to think and then like that. So the brain slows down. So when you're young and the brain is fertile, then you have to study. Now, that is called vidya. Now, you see how much the children, they just retain knowledge. It's like they just soak it up like a sponge. But as you get older, all that slows down. So the point of brahmacharya is celibacy. Celibacy means you do not associate with the opposite sex freely. There is segregation. You know, you have brahmacharis, you have brahmacharinis. They cannot associate freely with each other. And you'll see that because of that, they have much more time for study of the Vedas, right? And to serve the spiritual master, to develop spiritual qualities. So that is the point of the brahmacharya ashram. So we have upagravana brahmacharya. Upagravana means you know you'll get married, but you need training, that's the point. So brahmacharya is training to set you up for the rest of your life as a grihastha. Because as grihastha, it's much more difficult to make time to study and to read and to chant your rounds and so many things. So then the other type of brahmacharya is called naishtika or brihadvana. How does Prabhupada say in the purport?
Brihadvrata.
Yeah, great vow. So naishtika means never passes the semen. No association with the opposite sex. So that is considered to be a great vow. Brihadvrata. Not an easy thing to do, especially in this day and this age. No one in this room can even do it. Right? Everyone here is grihast. No one can practice that. But it is a great vow if you can do it. So it is rare that someone can do it. That's another type of brahmacharya. So brahmacharya means vidya. Then grihasta means, how do they become purified? By dana. Dana means charity. Right? Grihastas have to give charity. If you don't give charity as a grihastha, you don't get purified. Because if you just work and you keep everything for yourself, you cannot become purified. You have to give to ISKCON, the Krishna Consciousness Movement, and then you'll become purified. The nature of the grihastha is to become attached. So to develop detachment as a grihastha, you have to constantly give charity, regularly, weekly. Okay. That was actually Prabhupada's system. He said every week you should give something. So part of your salary every week. You choose, 10% or 50% or whatever it is, but every week you give something like that. Then, Vanaprastha, what is the religious principle? Tapasya, yeah. You have to do tapasya. Tapa. No? So a Vanaprastha means you get to the age of 50 and the husband and wife, they go together into the forest to practice spiritual life, tapasya. And you have to voluntarily give up, renounce your family, your friends, your connections, and go to a spiritual destination and just simply practice Krishna consciousness. Right? Or go and preach together. You see, like Sangharsan Prabhu and Vishnupriya Mataji. Yeah, you see that's what they are. They're Vanaprastha. They just, now they're older. Right? And then they just dedicate themselves to practicing Krishna consciousness without any other attachment. That is austerity. They do some tapasya. And then finally, the religious principle of the sannyasi is? Satyam. Param satyam dimihi. The first verse of the Bhagavatam says, they preach param satyam, the supreme truth. They're situated in the truth, in absolute knowledge, which is Krishna, and they preach that to others. So that is the religious principle of the sannyasi. He just absorbs himself in the absolute truth and he gives that absolute truth to others. Mind, body and words absorbed in Krishna service. So we see that here we're hearing about the brahmacharya. That is the point of brahmacharya, to cultivate vidya. Now, Prabhupada also points out that if you're qualified, you should remain renounced. But most of us are not on that level. So, just like I decided to get married again a few months ago, so I thought very deeply about it because Krishna opened up the opportunity for me to go into the renounced order of life. So then, when that came, that opportunity, I had to look at myself very closely to make sure I was qualified to do that. But then I realized, by Krishna's grace, I was not qualified to do that. So then one of my good friends, Atul Krishna Prabhu, he wrote to me. I wrote to him, I said, I'm going to get married. He wrote back. He said, it's better to be a grihastha meditating on renunciation than a renunciate meditating on sense gratification. So it's better. So you have to realize what your adhikara is. That is what varnashram is for. If your adhikara is to remain renounced, remain renounced. But if you're not qualified, then you go into grihastha life and you get purified that way. So we know from the 8th canto, Prabhupada explains, Gajendra and the elephant. Sorry, Gajendra was the elephant. So Gajendra and the crocodile. So Prabhupada explains you have to be properly situated. Then you will advance in Krishna consciousness. So there's no impediment. Doesn't mean if you're a sannyasi, you'll be more advanced than a grihastha. Grihasthas can be more advanced than sannyasis. Right? If they are fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, they're properly situated. So you have to be properly situated according to your adhikara, your qualification. Then Prabhupada explains that what the verses explain, the Bhagavatam is explained, we have to be honorable in our dealings with others. You see what happened is they come back and the brothers say, oh, no, we already divided everything, you can't have anything. Would you do that to your brother? Would you act like that, the way they've acted in this circumstance? No, you wouldn't do that. You know, I hope that we would not do that. I wouldn't do that. You know, if my brothers came, you know, and they'd been away and then they came back suddenly and all the, then we would divide everything up fairly. You know? So a devotee has to be honorable. You know? And that's one of the 12 aims of Shastra study. Academic and moral integrity. You know, when we go through our study, we at the beginning of the year, we always have the 12 aims of Shastric study. You know, the first class that we do of the year, the orientation lesson, which no one comes to, right? Which has the 12 aims of Shastric study. Right? That's why we're studying. It's one of the reasons, right? Because we want to become morally, have moral integrity. Because you have to be, you have to develop honor, you have to develop these good qualities to get back into the spiritual world. Because one thing that we all do in this material world, we're not honest. Right? We like to steal things. Hands up if sometimes you steal things. Hands up, okay, hands up if you don't steal things. Prashada may be different, but just like sometimes you go somewhere or sometimes they give you too much money in your account or different things like that, you know, little things happen in life. But we're dishonest, we don't say. I know myself, as I'm getting older, I'm becoming less like that. Developing more moral integrity. Because it doesn't sit right with me. You know, I used to always, like, you know, sometimes at the supermarket they forget to pay something or, you know, so you just take advantage of things all the time. Always there's ways to get around things or to get things for free or to do it cheaply. But as you get older, you don't feel so good about doing that. To develop moral integrity, that is part of our purification. So here we're hearing that, and it's actually interesting because if you read the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami says there are 64 angas of bhakti. And the first 10, he said, are the dwara, bhakti dwara, which means the gateway to bhakti or liberation. And he explains one of the items is that a devotee must be responsible in ordinary dealings. It doesn't mean because you're a devotee you can just do whatever you want. But you have to be responsible. It has to be academic and moral integrity. So you cannot cheat. That's the point here. It's saying in the Bhagavatam, you should be honorable. You should treat people properly. You should not cheat others, especially devotees and family members and like that. And then finally, Prabhupada is saying, in Vedic culture there should be respect for the elders. We were discussing this last night. Vedic culture is based upon one of the key important points or the principles of Vedic culture is you must be respectful to your elders. And you see in India that's still there to a great degree. People are very respectful to the elders in many circumstances. So the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us this, that we must be respectful. We must always have honor for those who are elder than us. That is part of the culture. But these young brothers of this particular devotee in the Bhagavad Gita, he comes back from the Brahmachari ashram, and then they're just trying to cheat him. They're not even respectful to their father. Right? They say, you can take the father and like that, but it's not respectful. So this is not Vedic culture. Vedic culture is based upon respect for those who are out. And you cannot make advancement in spiritual life unless you have respect for those who are senior. Otherwise, you don't make advancement. Even in material life, you're not successful. But in spiritual life, you must always offer respect to those who are more advanced and more senior. Any points?
You know, probably I parked my car outside the temple and somebody hit my car.
Wow, Krishna.
And they didn't have honesty to put a paper or something that they had hit.
Today?
They had not.
Today it happened?
No, yeah. I parked outside and somebody hit the car.
That happened today or a different day?
I think it happened on Saturday.
Saturday. Yeah, these things happen.
Mm-hmm. Usually what we do, we put a slip back to contact, But nobody put any slip. People who come here, they do it too.
Yeah, it's very common these days.
Yeah.
Very common. Any other points?
This Navaga is the father of Amrish Maharaj.
Thank you so much. Thank you for explaining this to us. Any other points? Okay. Navaga inquired, "My dear brothers, who have you given to me as my share of our father's property?" His elder brothers answered, "We have kept our father as your share." But when Nabaga went to his father and said, "My dear father, my elder brothers have given you as my share of property," the father replied, "My dear son, you do not do not rely upon their cheating words. I am not your property." So, Prabhupada did not like that the devotees become cheated. When he had his disciples building the Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan, then Prabhupada was there and he would go away and he would come back. And every 3 months or so when Prabhupada would come back, he would see that his Western disciples were being cheated because they didn't know the price of things. And in India, everyone tries to cheat you. They always try to overcharge for everything. So they were spending a lot. And Prabhupada was very angry. "Why are you being cheated?" So Prabhupada didn't like this. So we have to be careful when we go to India or Vrindavan, even in the West, but it's more common there for some reason. Then when you go there, you do not let the people cheat you. Prabhupada was not, he used to argue with the rickshaw wallahs, even over 10 rupees. Prabhupada would just like that. Well, there's one time Prabhupada was there in India and he was going for a walk and one man was carrying, I think it was in Mayapur, and he was carrying like a big basket of sabji on his head. He's carrying to sell at the market. Prabhupada said, "How much do you want for that?" He said, "We'll buy the whole basket." And then the man said some price, and Prabhupada said, "No," and Prabhupada cut him right down. And got him down to even a low price, actually. And then afterwards, when the man agreed, then Prabhupada said, Prabhupada actually gave him more money. Prabhupada said, "How much do you want?" He said, 20 rupees. Prabhupada said, "I'll give you 6 rupees." It was a ridiculous price, And then the man finally said, "Okay, 6 rupees." Then Prabhupada ended up giving him 10. Back then, that was So the point is that we should not be cheated. Prabhupada did not like this. Sometimes devotees are sentimental. They go to India and they think, "Oh, everything is spiritual. I'm in Mayapur, I'm in Vrindavan, I'll just get the rickshaw wallahs, whatever they ask for." But no, Prabhupada was not like that. Prabhupada would argue with them. Right? So you always treat the money as Krishna's money. Because if you save that money, you could be giving that to the deities. Sometimes I do that, I go to Lo Bazaar or something when I'm in Vrindavan, And, you know, as you're going down there, you know, you make sure you get the right price. The guy wants 100 rupees. The actual price is 50 rupees. And even then you're getting ripped off. So then you make sure it's 50, and then you get down there, and then that extra 50 you save, you give that to the deities when you get to the temple. What happened?
In Vrindavan, I went and asked for Goa too. They had the Goa green color Goa in it. I asked them, many times they got cheaper than that. And I asked them how much is a kilo. He said 120 rupees kilo. Then what happened? I was about to buy that. Then another lady, now she took the Goa and she went, and then she had some bad ones in it, and she just brought the Brijwasi lady, she brought it back, and then she said that, look, you charged me 30 rupees for 1 kilo, and then you're giving me these bad ones, I want to change it. She said, just in front of me. Then I told him, you told me 120 rupees per kilo, no? And then she's telling me, no, 30 rupees. What if he sold for 30 rupees? 120. Then I told him, this is 30 rupees a kilo. Why did you tell 120 rupees? Like that. And another time was a mineral water bottle, they sold me for, you know, very expensive. Later on I came to know, sold me like 50 rupees. They sold me for 120 or 30. Mineral water bottle. Even the shops, they're doing it.
Yeah, everyone's trying.
They know that the people coming from abroad, they know that people coming from abroad, and they can't double it.
Yeah. Yeah, even when I get a haircut in Vrindavan, then I say to the devotees, I say, how much is that? And they say, do you want the normal price or the Western price? As soon as you go in there, they see your Western, they just try to, you know, the price suddenly goes up. Like that. So you have to know what the prices are, and you have to be very strict. Prabhupada didn't like us being cheated. No? It's not Krishna conscious to be cheated. So. Any points? Nabaga's father said, all the descendants of Angira are now going to perform a great sacrifice. But although they are very intelligent, on every sixth day they will be bewildered in performing sacrifice and will make mistakes in their daily duties. So, Brihad Bhanupu, would like to read them.
Nabaga was very simple-minded. Therefore, when he went to his father, the father, in compassion for his son, suggested that as a means of livelihood, Nabaga could go to the descendants of Angira and take advantage of their misgivings in performing duties.
What are the points?
So why on every sixth day they are being given?
Why?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
That too, every sixth day.
I definitely have no idea. If you find out, then let me know. Any other point?
His father must be knowing so well everything about the sacrifice and everything. To advise his son like that.
Anything else?
He was a very simple hearted person. That's why he gave away honest advice to his son. He got away honest advice from his father. Is that the point?
Yeah. I mean, Prabhupada's making the point that devotees should be simple-hearted. Yeah. Devotees are not complicated. They should be very simple. So he doesn't think that, oh, my brothers have done this to me, I will begin to act like them. That's sometimes how the material people think. Materialistic consciousness means, oh, someone did something to me, now I will do it to them. But a devotee does not think like that. A devotee remains very simple and very pure-hearted. And he just remains focused on his service to Krishna. Because in the material world, whenever someone does something, there's always retaliation. What is the symptom of the mode of passion? That is, someone says something sharp to us or something unpleasant to us, immediately we'll say something back. And I catch myself sometimes when I do that. That means you're under the influence of Rajagun. Rajagun means, so soon as someone insults you, you will insult them back. Like that. And that's, most of the world is like that. If someone insults, but a devotee is very simple-hearted, and when he becomes cheated by his brothers, what does he do? He just remains very simple, very pure. He doesn't try to retaliate. And his father advises him, now you go and worship these brahmanas. So the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us that if we want to be successful in life, we need to get the blessings of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. We need to serve them. So he goes to the Brahmanas, the Vaishnavas, takes their shelter, takes their blessings, and he gets all benefit. So Bhagavad Gita is teaching us this. For our lives to be successful, you need to get blessings constantly. And how do you get blessings?
Sorry.
By seva, doing something practical. You know, the example we've said many times, the story. There's one disciple of Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was going for a morning walk every day. He was in Vrindavan. And he'd come back through the main gate. And every day the devotee was standing there. And he was chanting mantras in Sanskrit about Prabhupada from the Bhagavatam, saying, "We have met your divine grace by the will of providence," some verse from the first canto. And Prabhupada just walked past him for about 3 days. Didn't even stop and listen. On the fourth day, then Prabhupada, he stopped and he put his cane down. And he said, "There is rubbish there on the ground. Pick it up." And the devotee was like shocked. He thought he was doing service for Prabhupada. And Prabhupada wants something practical. He doesn't want us to stand there and just chant verses. But do some practical savor. There's dirt on the ground and clean it up. That's the point. So how do you get the blessings of the Vaishnavas? By doing seva, doing something practical. If you don't do practical service, you can't advance in Krishna consciousness. So we should always look to do some practical service, not just some lip service. And sometimes the advanced devotee is there, and devotees say, "Oh, Prabhuji, give me your mercy. I'm so fallen like this." What is that? Who cares? Do something practical. If you want to get the mercy of the devotee, then do some seva. Then you will get blessed. Any points?
Only you said that devotee is simple hearted and doesn't retaliate. But in the case, we see here that probably, people cheating and hurting to yourself, it's okay. But when you see people hurting your near and dear ones, could be your family members, could be your mom, dad, or so. In that case, how do you suggest them the same thing? Because that time they tell you that, because you have not gone through that, you don't know. It's what I have gone through, that's why. So in that case, how do you?
So what's your point?
The point is then, how do we try to explain to them or tell them? Because it's the one other person who's going through the difficulty of being cheated and everything. Could be a devotee chanting 16 rounds or something, but the pain of being cheated, which is very prominent these days. So how do we let people come and cheat us? Because sometimes even if you are apparently intelligent, but you get cheated so often. Was there more intelligent people to cheat you?
I can't understand. What's the question?
I think if the near and dear ones are cheated, do we look and do behave the same way? Just be humble and believe? Or do we have to retaliate to the person who is cheating?
No, it means that if someone's like cheating us, we don't let ourselves get cheated. That's the point. Prabhupada was not into being cheated. Prabhupada didn't like things being taken advantage of. So then you have to, if someone's cheating you, someone's stealing money or doing something, you don't let that happen. Right? You put a stop to it. Right? So whatever needs to be done. The problem is in this day and age, everything's very complicated. It's like in Australia, right? If you come into my house to steal something, right, and then I see you're in my house, and then I attack you because you're in my house stealing something, right, the police will arrest me. So that doesn't even make sense. But that's the way the world is these days. So these days it's very complicated, so you have to, be a little sensible, a little practical as well. Yeah, Kali Yuga is very difficult. Just like, I know circumstances where someone said something to someone, and then that person got upset, and then they, it wasn't even like anything serious or anything, and then they took the person to court. And they said, "Oh, this person was harassing me and all this," and the person was just making some jokes. And that's the way the law is these days. Or even, I think it was George Harrison. One guy he had like a skylight on his roof, like a window in the roof of the house, And some guy was looking through because he wanted to see George Harrison. And then he slipped and he fell through and crashed and hit the ground. And then he sued George Harrison because he fell through the window. And that's how the world is these days. Everything is crazy. So the point is, we should not let people cheat us, but we also have to be a little worldly and understand the way the world is these days, because the whole law system is crazy and the whole world is very mixed up now. So I suppose I can't give you a straight answer. In the old days it was a lot more simple. Mm-hmm. Right, someone's causing some problem, you just get a stick and you just hit them and then that's it. That's how it worked. In India even now, to a degree, it's still like that. You know, someone does something and they just come with a stick. Bang, just in the story.
Everywhere it's like that. Yesterday one lady was walking in Sydney, she's from Bangalore. Somebody stabbed her, she's dead.
Is it?
Yes.
Yeah, so.
It's a big news now.
Okay. Yeah, but the way the world thinks these days is not very normal. But previously it was much more normal. Even one time I was at Govardhan Hill, this is maybe 10 years ago or something, and one of the local guys, he's obviously a bit crazy or drunk or something, he had a gun. And he had the gun, like a big rifle, and the car was there, like in the road, everyone was walking around, in the middle of that, and he's holding the gun, the person like this, in the car, like this. So one of the local guys in the shop, he just walked over, he didn't even know, run over him, just walked over, and just grabbed the gun, just went bang, just smacked him in the head, smack, just took the gun off him, you know, just hit him and just walked off. End of story, and it was all finished. Some crazy guy in the middle of the road, you know, just took the gun, he just went bang, just hit him, the guy just went, and he just walked off with the gun. Yeah, and that's the way to deal with it, actually. Mm-hmm. These days, you do that in Australia, then then I'll go to court, and who did, you know, it's all crazy. So we can't give a definitive answer. But Prabhupada didn't like us being cheated. You know, we should not be taken advantage of, that's the point. If someone's cheating, do not let that happen. But these days, to the way the law is, you have to be careful also. So, any other points?
So devotees have to be simple, but it doesn't mean that we allow to be cheated.
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah, I mean, we're simple people. Prabhupada's our example, right? Prabhupada, a very simple person. Right? But at the same time, he was very worldly. Yeah, he wouldn't allow people to cheat him. You know, Mr. Nair tried to cheat him. Prabhupada was like, ooh, back and forth and back and forth. You know, that, like the story, you know, Prabhupada brought the land in Mumbai, and then Mr. Nair, then he took the land back. You know, he tricked the devotees, and he got the land back. You know, they convinced Prabhupada's disciples to give the land back, so they gave the land back. And then Tamal Krishnamurti rang Prabhupada on the phone, said, we've given the land back. And Prabhupada said, you could not have. And he just hung up the phone. Then he came back to Mumbai immediately. He was there within a day. Right? So then Prabhupada arranged to have a lunch with Mr. Nair. So they went around, they saw Mr. Nair, they had lunch. Big, you know, a lot of prasad. Everyone ate a lot like that. And then it might have been the Prabhupada invited Mr. Nair. He was staying somewhere. Prabhupada was staying. They had a big lunch and they cooked. And Mr. Nair brought his guru. Because he was scared the Prabhupada was going to use some mind tricks. He was going to control Mr. Nair's mind. You know, so he brought his guru with him to protect him against Prabhupada. So then Prabhupada fed them a lot. He made sure they ate a lot. So Prabhupada must have invited them for lunch. And he made them eat a lot. And then after lunch in India, everyone goes to sleep. So then Prabhupada, he rang some beds. And they went in. The guru laid down and Mr. Nair laid down. And Prabhupada was in the next room with Tamal Krishnamurti. And they also laid down on the bed. And there was just a sliding door. And Prabhupada, you know, he wasn't asleep. Prabhupada was just listening. As soon as he heard the guru snoring, he said to Tamal Krishnamurti, he said, go and wake up Mr. Nair and bring him here. And I believe the guru there. Right? So he went and he tapped Mr. Nair and he said, come like that. So he brought him in. And then Prabhupada spoke to him very sweetly and very convincingly and got him to sign the land back. You know, so they signed the land back again. And then later on the guru woke up and he said, why did you do that? So Prabhupada was very cunning. Prabhupada was very cunning. Because he would not be cheated. That's the point. And then Mr. Nair got the land back again and then it went on for 2 years. Right? And then finally Mr. Nair died of a heart attack. Prabhupada was in New Zealand. Mr. Nair died of a heart attack, and then Prabhupada said, I've been praying to Lord Nisringadev to kill this demon. When he found out that he was dead. But Prabhupada would not be cheated, that's the point. So we should not be taken advantage of either. That's any other point?
Actually, Srila Prabhupada was not cunning. I think the Lord was guiding him.
Okay. Which verse are we on?
It's 4 and 5.
4 and 5. Nabaga's father continued, go to those great souls and describe 2 Vedic hymns pertaining to Vaishwadev. When the great sages have completed the sacrifice and they're going to the heavenly planets, they will give you the remnants of the money they have received from the sacrifice. Therefore, go there immediately. Thus, Nabaga acted exactly according to the advice of his father. And the great sages of the Angira dynasty gave him all their wealth, and then they went to the heavenly planets. So, we should follow the directions of our superiors. So, his father said, you do like this, and he got an auspicious result. So, in our case, we follow the Guru. So, you follow the spiritual master, you get an auspicious result. So, you have to follow strictly the instructions of the spiritual masters. So whatever advice you get, you follow that direction, so everything will turn out very auspiciously. But if you follow your own path, your own ideas, then it can become inauspicious. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, my spiritual master, he once said, I do not trust any one person's mind, including my own. So as devotees, we never make important decisions by ourselves. We always consult with our seniors, with our guides, with our gurus. Right? And in this way, we'll make the right decisions in life. Any points?
So he got the blessing of all the Brahmanas and Rakshasas.
Yeah.
And then he got Amrish Maharaj.
Anything else? Thereafter, while Nabaga was accepting the riches, a black-looking person from the north came to him and said, all the wealth from this sacrificial arena belongs to me. Nabaga then said, these riches belong to me. The great saintly persons have delivered them to me. When Nabaga said this, the black-looking person replied, let us go to your father and ask him to settle our disagreement. In accordance with this, Nabaga inquired from his father. The father of Nabaga said, whatever the great sages sacrificed in the arena of the Daksha Jagya, they offered to Lord Shiva as his share. Therefore, everything in the sacrificial arena certainly belongs to Lord Shiva. Thereupon, after offering obeisances to Lord Shiva, Nabaga said, O worshipable Lord, everything in this arena of sacrifice is yours. This is the assertion of my father. Now with great respect, I bow my head before you, begging your mercy. So you see what the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us here, is that as devotees, we should always remain detached. Because the wealth was given to him, but the nature in this material world is when we gain something, we become very attached to it. But factually speaking, it's not really ours anyway. And as you become advanced in Krishna consciousness, you can realize Krishna can take anything away from you anytime he wants. He can give you everything, give you the whole world if he wants, but he can also take everything from you anytime. So a devotee never becomes attached. We never think this is mine and everything belongs to me. Especially when it comes to money and wealth and material possessions. You have to be detached because sometimes things just flow away. So that is the nature of a devotee in Krishna consciousness. A devotee always thinks, I have to practice detachment. Vasudeva bhagavati bhakti yoga priyojita janaya yashu vairagyam Gyanam Chayara Hoitukam. Bhagavatam says, when you practice devotional service, the two symptoms that will follow your bhakti, if you're practicing properly, are jnana and vairagya. Vairagya means detachment. So a devotee should be detached, should not be attached to material possessions. Should understand that everything ultimately belongs to Krishna. Jnana and vairagya are the two sons of bhakti. They are ornaments of bhakti. They automatically follow bhakti. So devotees should naturally develop these two qualities. He should become learned. He should have jnana. He should have knowledge. What is knowledge ultimately? Knowledge means to differentiate between matter and spirit. Now that's the ultimate knowledge. As the first verse of the Bhagavatam says, the Bhagavatam will teach us to differentiate between material and spiritual energy. And a devotee should develop vairagya based upon his knowledge and his bhakti. He understands that nothing in this world belongs to me. And he doesn't become overly attached. And he should be noble. Devotees should always be fair. Should not be greedy and try to over-accumulate for himself. Rupa Goswami warns us that this will shabir bhakti vinashiti. Vinash. Vinashiti means it will destroy our bhakti. If we become achahara priyashascha. Achahara. Priyashas means over-endeavor. Right? Achahara means over-accumulation. Right? Trying to keep. What's that? Overeating and? Over-accumulation. Priyashas means endeavor. Priyash means working hard. The Prabhupada says achahara means eating too much or accumulating too much. And that is achahara. So these are the two things that will destroy your bhakti. You can't advance in devotional service when you're too much into achaha or priyashas, just working. You see non-devotees, they're like that. They just work. And after a while, they forget even while they're working. There's one guy I saw, and he's a billionaire kind of guy. And he still works every day. He gets up at 3:26 or something every day. He's got this thing in his head. I mean, he has to get up at a particular time every day. He sets his clock. Even if he goes to bed 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock at night, he still gets up at 3:30 every morning. And he works like 17 hours a day. And the guy's a billionaire. He owns Manchester United Soccer Club, which is one of the biggest sports brands on the planet. I mean, you know, he's multi-millionaire. But still, and then they asked him, they said, now you own so much and you're so wealthy, why don't you slow down? He said, then what will I do? So even though he has so much and he's worked so hard, but Priya, he just endeavors more and more and more. But Bhagavatam said this is like a donkey. Right? You're just carrying a big load. Right? And you think all day. You know, Prabhupada explains, they hang the carrot in front of the donkey. So all day he just keeps walking, thinking he's about to get to the carrot. Right? And at the end of the day, then his master gives him one carrot. So that is material life. You just work and work and work. But what is the point? So a devotee should be detached. Don't work and work and work, but use your time for spiritual life. Just work as much as you have to. Best thing is you don't work at all. That's best. Work out a way you don't have to work at all. Make a lot of money and then retire. You know, you see like a Siddha Rajaprabhu. And he's only 50. He's not an old guy, right? But he got enough money that he could just retire, so what did he do? He retired. He just went to the Holy Dhamma, right? Because he understood, right? Now I've worked. Yeah, he could have kept working, could have got another job and kept going. But he understood now that's enough. Now I just use my time to serve Krishna. Now he just travels around to all the holy places and he just sends emails where he is. Every day we get an email. At the moment he's in Navadvip in Mayapur. So this is a good example that not to over endeavor, but to save your time for spiritual life. That's the point. And once again, we see respect for superiors. Because when he understood this black person who came from the north, who was the black person?
Shiva.
Shiva himself, Mahadev. Who is Shiva to us? Yeah, he's our guru. He is our worshipable Lord, Mahadev. We worship Lord Shiva. In our tradition, we worship Lord Shiva as Gopishwara, Mahadev, the Kshetrapal, the protector of the holy dharma. That is how we worship him. That's how Bhaktivinoda Thakur worships Lord Shiva. So he's giving great reverence. He's very important. Every day I pray to Lord Shiva before I chant my japa. Not just Lord Shiva, many personalities. But one of the people that I pray to is Lord Shiva. Because he's Gopishwara. He's the protector of the holy dharma. You cannot enter the holy dharma, right? Because the holy dharma is the spiritual abode. What is in between ourselves and the spiritual abode?
Ego.
Yeah, ultimately false ego. Right? Because when you pass back to the spiritual world, you have to go through all the coverings of the universe. And the biggest covering in the universe, which is 10 times bigger than all the other coverings, is the false ego. And Lord Shiva is the Lord of Ahankar. So we pray to Lord Shiva every day, please destroy my Ahankar so I can enter into Vrindavan, into the spiritual world. So as soon as he understood this person was Lord Shiva, what did he do? He offered respect. So that's how we should live our lives. We should always think, we would never think, you know, to take money from a superior or to cheat a superior or... But rather we understand, even if I'm going to lose everything, and we'll see this in the ninth canto, different examples are there. Even when you're going to lose everything, Krishna is testing you to see what is your integrity. Will you still give everything to Krishna? What is your integrity? What is your moral principle? How do you act? So Krishna is always, so he's testing here the king, and he sees he has passed the test because he gave everything to Shiva. And then what did Shiva do? He gave it all back to him. He just became very wealthy, and the Lord Shiva said, none of that is yours, it is mine. Right? And then he said, okay, then I will give it to you. And Lord Shiva said, okay, now you can keep it.
That's the point.
And he gave him, yeah, spiritual knowledge also. Like that. So, did you read the pastime before class?
Yeah, definitely.
You just read it then? You're not listening to me?
Yeah.
I've been studying all day to give this class and you don't...
I'm listening.
Did you hear anything I said in the last 5 minutes?
Yeah. You're
I was giving class at the farm. Thursday nights we have like a Bhagavad Gita, we read the Bhagavad Gita. And you know we have the woofers at the farm. You know, they volunteer people. And one of the girls, she was asleep on the couch. Like that. And all the others were listening, but she was sleeping. So I woke her up, you know, I was speaking and I said, Carla. And she kind of woke up like that. And I said, what have we been speaking about? And she said, Krishna. True. So you're not listening, but then you'll say, we're speaking about Nabhaga. Very good. But please try to stay awake, wouldn't you? Okay. Lord Shiva said, whatever your father has said is the truth, and you also are speaking the same truth. Therefore, I, who know the Vedic mantras, shall explain transcendental knowledge to you. So, he blessed Nabhaga. Why did he bless him?
Because he was pleased.
Because he was pleased. And what was Nabhaga's quality?
Simple.
Yeah, ultimately it's humility. Ultimately it's dānya. Dānya means humility. If you have this quality, you will always be blessed. Therefore it is said by Lord Chaitanya, specifically Trinada Piyasunichena, Tarora Piyasihishnuna, Amanina Manadena, Kiratanya Hasadahari. If you have that quality, because Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami says, we should wear that verse around our neck. Like Kantimala. He said that string that verse around your neck, Trinada Piyasunichena. So if you have that quality, you will always be blessed by other devotees. If you're not humble, you will not be blessed. You cannot make advancement. When you're really humble, truly humble, then you will receive the blessings of the great devotees. So because he had that quality, Lord Shiva blessed him. And he said, I will give you spiritual understanding. Which is the highest blessing. So any points?
We should be humble.
We should be. What's that?
We should be humble, not possible.
Yeah.
That should be the aim.
That should be the aim. Yeah. Be very humble.
Yeah.
Listen to your teacher. Great humility. Don't read the books while I'm
Actually, I read it before as well.
Well, see, and now you say things that are not even true. So many things are going on.
Yeah.
Lord Shiva said, now you may take all the wealth remaining from the sacrifice, for I give it to you. After saying this, Lord Shiva, who is most adherent to the religious principles, disappeared from that place. So, the Bhagavad Gita has mentioned this many times, in many pastimes, at the end of the pastime, the third canto, the end of the pastime, Lord Varaha, different pastimes which are there. It says, when you hear this pastime, you will benefit spiritually and materially. And actually it's a fact, we experience this. By studying the Bhagavad Gita seriously, materially everything is taken care of, right? And spiritually you progress so much. And actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was a great renunciate, he said that the devotees of Krishna should have the best of everything in this material world. Devotees should have the best. Not that they want the best, but they should have the best facilities. And practically, that's the point. That devotees, we get so much facility given to us by Krishna to live comfortably in this world so that we can progress in Krishna consciousness and ultimately so we can preach. So by studying the Bhagavad Gita, you get spiritual benefit, but you also get material asset. That, by Krishna's grace, so that you can serve Krishna nicely. Any point?
You can also understand that from this pastime that when you develop humbleness and respect seniors, he will get more than what he expected. Because he has not only got his asset back, but Lord Shiva bestowed his mercy by giving the transcendental knowledge.
He got everything, basically. Yeah, that's good. Okay, final verse. If one hears and chants or remembers this narration in the morning and evening with great attention, he certainly becomes learned, experienced in understanding the Vedic hymns, and expert in self-realization. So this is called the Shruti file. In the Bhagavad Gita, you'll see at the end of certain chapters, it gives a Shruti file, which means like the benefit, the blessing. So of this 12 verses we've just read, this is like the blessing or the benefit of what you will get. So what is the Bhagavad Gita telling us? That we should study the Bhagavad Gita very seriously. It says morning and night, so it means every day we should be studying. You should be reading every day Prabhupada's books. You should be every day listening to lectures by advanced devotees, by Prabhupada himself. So every day we should be hearing and chanting and hearing and chanting. And by this serious study, then we will get unlimited benefit. Now, what are the benefits that we get that are mentioned in this verse? Well, the first point which the verse is making is that we should study morning and evening. And Prabhupada called this the ISKCON sandwich. In the beginning of the day, we have sadhana. At the end of the day, we have sadhana. And in between, we do seva, or service for Krishna. That's the point. So even if you have to go to work, you say, well, that's not service to Krishna. But if you're working, and then you give a certain amount of your wage to Krishna, then that is devotional service. And the more you give to Krishna, the more purified you become. So it is devotional service. So the beginning of the day and the end of the day, there should be spiritual nourishment. And then, as it says in this verse, that one will, he certainly becomes learned, experienced in understanding the Vedic hymns, and expert in self-realization. So Prabhupada expected us to become learned. We should be learned, should be known for learning. Prabhupada said, just like the lawyer knows the law books. You know, if you go to a court, the lawyer, he knows the, he says, you know, in this case, this happened, that. Or Prabhupada said, like the Christians know the Bible. Sometimes you meet the Christian people. Have you ever spoken to the Christian people? Right? They know the Bible. Right? They say in John 8:16 it says this, and in Genesis, and so they know it. Right? So we should also be like that. That's what Prabhupada wanted. So that we can convince others in Krishna consciousness. So that's the benefit. If you study every morning, every evening, right? And as Prabhupada says here, if you meditate on the meaning of the Bhagavatam, you'll become very learned, you'll purify yourself, and then you'll be able to help others. So any points? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.